Hey, everybody. Welcome on back to King of the Ride podcast. I am your host. I am Ted King. I'm happy to have you back. We are on the move. We've got Levi's Gran Fondo, the proclaimed savior to North American road racing, coming up. That comes with a long list of heavy hitters from the professional roadside, from the gravel world. So Laura, the kids, and I are on to California with that on the docket. Right after that, Sea Otter is soon after, 1 week later. And then I'm off to Europe with Ngamba to ride the N2. Check it. There are still a few spots left for this. Quite frankly, this once-in-a-lifetime journey down the beautiful strip of pavement across the entire country of Portugal, north to south. Myself and Lawrence Tendam are the hosts for that, so check it out at ngamba.pro. And then the Traca, a race in my former hometown, Girona, then Gravel Locos in Texas, and on and on and on. We are busy. We do a lot of events, and largely we do competitive events. Our guest today is Noah Havlick, and if you follow the excellent social media presence, that is Mid-South, that is the early season gravel race in Stillwater, Oklahoma, then maybe you saw Noah in his incredible recent story of taking on the Mid-South. If we in the King family do a lot of cycling events, it's safe to say that Noah does not do a lot of cycling events. So it's really interesting to hear his story and perspective. But in particular, referencing that social post, I'm not letting the cat out of the bag here, but in so many words, Noah arrives to Oklahoma at the last minute with the sole intent to support his friend doing the Ultra Marathon, which takes place the Friday of Mid-South weekend. And then jokes about doing the actual Mid-South ride on a 40-plus pound single-speed beach cruiser, campus cruiser-type rental bike. Has this conversation over the course of the drive from the airport to Stillwater. And I will leave it at that. The story is magnificent. Hey, before we begin, it is important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that is why, for the past nearly 3 years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're now at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and aim to find the best quality ingredients available. Now, quality for AG1 is not just a buzzword. It is backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. Now, taking care of my health should not be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by making it so that there are not a million different pills and capsules to keep track of. It's just one scoop of AG1 mixed in water. That's how I start every day. So look, if you want to replace your multivitamin routine, then start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/TedKing. That is drinkag1.com/TedKing. Check it out. Now, please enjoy this conversation with Noah Havlick. I think that people who are on my podcast have a presence in the cycling world. So maybe through social media or with lots of public face-to-face interactions. So my listener will have some sort of awareness of the person with whom I'm speaking. And the commonality among my guests is that, you know, it's the bicycle. I think it's safe to say that my listeners will not know so much about you unless they've happened to stumble upon this Mid-South social media post. So let's set the scene for a minute. Tell me where you are right now.
I'm in my mom's basement in Louisville, Kentucky. Okay. I started riding a bike here in high school to get around and as my kind of way to freedom for a while, and still is. Most of my cycling or riding a bike is just based around commuting. And only recently have I been interested and started participating in events. Like last summer, I did Ragbri,
oh, wow.
Which was really fun. And then this Mid-South ride, I wasn't supposed to be riding in even, but it had ended up working out that I could join. So
yeah. Okay. And jumping around Mid-South, because that will be the crux of the conversation, but what do you do for fun currently? Are you in school? Have you been in school? What do you do for work?
I'm a rock climber. Uh-huh. That's primarily what I spend my time doing. Whether it's like traveling or climbing here in Kentucky in the Red River Gorge, that's what I spend most of my time doing. By trade, I'm a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so most of my time is spent climbing.
I mean, I see that on your social media. You're obviously a rock climber. What is that? The punchline is, what does that look like? I mean, are you climbing 7 days a week? Are you climbing multiple times a day? Do you climb 3 days a week? What does that look like in your day-to-day, week-to-week?
It ebbs and flows throughout the year. I do a lot of like trips that might be like 2 to 3 weeks long and have a higher concentration of climbing. Then I'm normally out on the cliffs like 1 to 2 days a week. And right now I'm just kind of a weekend warrior, but most of my climbing revolves around going and finding new routes to climb, except when I'm traveling. And I seek out big routes, like long routes, multi-pitch routes.
Yeah.
And getting more into like the longer, drawn out expedition style rock climbing adventures.
Nice. Okay, you mentioned Ragbri. For our I think our cycling audience will have heard of it, and if they don't know what it is, it's Ride Across. Please fill in the blank. Great. Please, what does Ragbri even stand for? Do you know?
I don't actually know.
I guess
I don't know
enough.
It doesn't matter. Last year was the 50th anniversary, uh-huh, of it, and they followed mostly the historic line, I think, okay, which it was like the fourth most climbing that they'd had on the event,
yeah,
in the 50 years. I think this year's even steeper, but yeah, they're, it was really fun. I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't very fit going into it. And my bike, I feel like my bike just made it, but it was really fun. I went with several friends from here in Louisville,
uh-huh,
Madison and Jesse and Brian, and we had a really good time.
Nice.
I was beyond impressed by the logistics of that event, and how they were able to close the roads the way that they did for such long stretches.
Sure.
It was really impressive.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's not any, honestly, you're the first person I've talked to who has done it, and which is crazy because I live in the cycling world, and often the events I'm doing are gravel events or road races or mountain bike races, which goes to say something, because I think Ragbri, I want to say it's a week long and there are 12,000 people, 15,000 people. I mean, it's something absurd.
I think like over the whole course, but even on, I wish I had the numbers, but even on, they're like, basically they have a critical mass day where they try to get everybody out.
Yeah.
Like everybody out. And they were trying to get to 50,000 riders this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were shy of that, but, you know, all the other days were anywhere in between, like 20,000 to 30,000 people.
Yeah.
And if you ever pulled off and stopped, it was just a continuous line of bikes. Like you never had to worry. You weren't ever worried that you were going to stay too long at one place. Like there's always like this ant line going by, like,
yeah.
It's wild.
Okay.
I think it's also kind of known as like an event in the sense of like, it's like anti-competition. It's like, that's the antithesis of what the event is, you know, there's no winner.
Yeah.
And they encouraged people to kind of vary their styles of riding to kind of have different kinds of experiences within it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is awesome. Yeah. I mean, they promote camping and they promote the festival and the party. I've certainly talked to a lot of people about it. I'm almost embarrassed to have said that I don't know anyone who's done the event. I take that back. I know Lance Armstrong's done it, for example. And I know some people who have done the expo. I wasn't crazy in saying Ride Across, so that it's Registers Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. So thankfully anyone who's screaming at their telephone right now being like, Ted, come on, you got to know this. That is what RAGBRAI is, and it sounds like a pretty amazing event. So, okay. Everything I know about you is from a short social media post, or I guess a lengthy social media post, but it is that you are a rock climber and that you stumble upon this event Mid-South. I would like you to expound upon how you found the event. And quite frankly, I mean, I'm going to interject some questions here and there, but tell me about the whole day, because it is nothing short of extraordinary, or multiple days, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I first heard about it when, I don't know, I have a couple friends that are into races like that. I think it was my friend Fallon, though, that sent me the link and was like, hey, you should register for this. And at the time, I was in Lander, Wyoming. I just got out of the Wind River Range, and I really needed that like $150 to get home.
Yeah.
So I couldn't, I was like, I really wanted to, but I was like, when I get home, once I get home, I can buy the ticket. I get home, it's sold out. And it's like, oh, well, but Fallon, got a running ticket. Mm-hmm. She's going to do the 50K run. And so, so happened I was going to be in this Las Vegas climbing trip in Red Rocks the week before. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to fly to OKC because I just wanted to support her in the race because they're great friends. And like, I was just psyched for her run and to see the event as well. So threw out a Facebook, on the Facebook forum that I was looking for a ride from the airport. And so happened some people that were also riding to Mid-South, were down to give me a ride. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of became fast friends, which was cool. On the ride out, cause it's maybe like an hour and a half, Stillwater to the airport. And, we just were like talking, and I kind of joked as we were leaving OKC, like, oh, wouldn't it be so funny if we just like picked up a city bike for the, and I raced it. And then the guy was Zoe and Haley, and Zoe was like, dude, no one's done that. You should do that. And so I looked like, I mean, obviously we were leaving Oklahoma City and there's like a big fine if you don't return those in 24 hours. So mm-hmm. I looked up and found that the campus rents these beach cruisers for $2 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orange Rides, Oklahoma State, I guess, is a college. But and so anyway, I get in, I meet up with my friends in Stillwater, and they're staying at Airbnb outside of town. So at that point, I'm like support mode for Fallon. I haven't really registered at all for the race or even gotten a bike. The night before, we packed our snacks and like made a plan, and you know, the next day they had their run. And as soon as they took off, I went to the campus, which was pretty far. I started walking and then realized it was going to take me like an hour to walk to the campus, even though it's like this really small town. It was really funny.
Yeah.
But I found one of those bird scooters, or it wasn't a bird scooter, but
yeah.
Scooter. And I paid for it and rode to the campus. By the time I got to the campus, it was like $6.
Oh, no way.
I was like, for a mile ride.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no. Because the budget is thin for this leg of the trip. I'm just like trying to squeeze out what I can.
Sure.
I just thought it was funny. That was kind of... but they... I go in and it's like... it's actually like a parking enforcement office.
Okay.
It feels very muted, very like dim, like kind of like burnt out bureaucracy vibes. And I go in and I ask for the orange ride to fill out the forms. And then this guy takes me back and there's like a bike shop in the back of this building or the side of this building. And with like 20 banged up beach cruisers. And apparently their program has been dormant since COVID.
Oh, wow.
They don't have a bike mechanic student, like a student bike mechanic or a Mark social media person yet or anything.
Yep.
And, they really could use it because wouldn't take much. But I went through, it took maybe 6 or 7 going through these bikes. Just like, I mean, it's just a 1 year in a coaster break, but you know, finding which one didn't have a terrible warp in the wheel and like making some like adjustments and stuff.
Yeah.
Just lubing the chain really. And then,
is the officer helping you at all? Or is he sort of just like standing by the door waiting to shut the light out behind?
So, yeah. So that's a good question. Because you know, he could very well be like sitting there watching his watch, like tick, 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 like, come on, like this is the 6th one, come on. But I kind of explained what I was doing. Actually, I didn't tell him, and he kind of asked if I was going to do the race. And I was like, yeah, actually. And so then he's kind of got a little twinkle in his eye, and he was like helping me choose. And like, I was kind of like apologizing or taking so long, but he's like, no, you got to find, you're going to bike 58 miles tomorrow, you gotta find the right one.
Yeah, the least absolutely destroyed one.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, you know, whether he gets paid by the hour or salary, it's like way better than whatever he was doing in the office. It was just like, you know, punching on the keyboard. we were just wrenching on bikes for like 45 minutes. So, yeah. But yeah, so it was like $2 a day. It was like perfect. So I booked it for 2 days and then I rode back to town. But at that point I was trying to make it out to the Midway aid station cause I had found gear. And, I asked like 50, 60 people if anybody knew anybody that was like riding out there. I couldn't find anyone. And then luckily at the very last second, I saw James, one of the friends in the Airbnb. He's riding in the gravel race, the 100. And, I caught him at the last second. He was about to ride to the aid station on his bike, and I got his keys, and he let me borrow the car to drive out there.
Right on.
But I get out there. I'm still 2 miles away. That was the closest I could get at the time. And I see somebody go in with his gravel bike, and I give him the bag, and I was like, can you just put this on the sideline? Huh. You're like, I'm so nervous. I don't know where she is, like if I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
And he does it. I go around, end up running some of the course to get to the way. And it was just really cool. I'd never been in that sort of situation where you can be like radically useful to your friends. like just like, here's this stuff, and like getting them psyched up at the end, like to go up the hill.
So did you you end up seeing Fallon, I presume?
Yeah, I did. Like only 15 minutes later. So I got there just in time. Fallon and Rose is the other person.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was great. I kind of like ran back to the car, was cheering on other runners.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, it's time to register while they do the rest of the race because the line's long. I get back to town, get in line, and get to just kind of observe, you know, because I hadn't been sitting still for very long. So I'm just getting to sit in this line, watch everybody walk by. And it was nice. Like, it was very diverse, like a lot of queer people of color, indigenous people. There was like, I don't know. Generally, people were happy. There was like different levels of buy-in to the outfits. Yeah. Like, you know, but everybody's like, I don't know. I think everybody was showing up for that event, like, was generally in like a very good mood. I don't know. It was really nice.
Well, yeah, I talked about that event. You know, I typically I'm going to competitive events more often than not. I'm at races. And there are big events. There are 500 people, or maybe there are 3,000 or 4,000 people events. But what's really cool in my perspective of Mid-South is that it really just welcomes all comers. And it's the first event of the year. You know, here I am in Vermont. Like, we got dumped with snow today. But there's just such a coming to life and spring to it. You know, spring to the season, the seasonality being the first big event of the year. So, yeah, I was going to ask, like, what do you observe? It's really cool to hear, I mean, a relatively cycling outsider like yourself say, yeah, you just see a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I saw what I noticed from the organization. Well, so like my process of getting registered was just walking up and seeing if there's any last second registers. I'd talked to someone the night before that said, come over here then and we'll get you in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. The guy was like a little confused at first, but then looked over and she's like, let him go. Gave me a bag. And
do you think, did anyone observing or helping you register any awareness of your situation coming in from out of state?
No clue.
Planning to ride a cruiser?
No.
No. You're just like,
I didn't.
You're just somebody else.
Bother. Yeah. It's kind of like my little secret for a little while, because I just had it parked over by everybody else's bikes. But I just felt I don't know. It was just a very accepting feeling, being a last second rider, being let in. I don't think they ever charged me for that, but I don't like it. Like, I just felt welcomed already. Mm-hmm. And now I need a helmet. So I walk to the bike shop, to district bike shop, and I go up to the front desk and I'm like, hey, I'm from out of town. I don't have a bike helmet. Do you know anywhere that does like secondhand bike helmets? Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, other than Goodwill, it's a few miles away. And he went and asked manager Crystal, yeah. And she came up to me and she's like, can you get a helmet? And she asked like, what size are you? And and she had some demo helmets in the back and she gave me a demo helmet.
Amazing.
And I was set. But it's just like, I was just like, can't please give you a hug? Like, yeah,
Crystal's amazing.
But
she's the motor. You know, I think a lot of people who are aware of Mid-South are aware of Bobby because he has such a presence. And then Crystal is the motor of the operation. And I'd be perfectly happy to say it in front of Bobby. I think she's the brains of the operation also.
Yeah, and to like, you know, obviously it has a priority straight because, you know, someone coming up needed a helmet. It's like, let's get him a helmet. Yeah. I just felt a lot of love.
For sure.
In that, yeah.
So, I end up talking to Bobby. I mentioned that I was going to be talking with you, and he said, "Yeah, I didn't know much about his story. I did show up the morning of the race, or maybe it was the night before, and he said he saw your bike sitting out front, and like, you know, it's funny because in a sea of bicycles, no bike really stands out except your bicycle stands out." Right. I mean, it probably outweighs every other bike 2x. I mean, I got to imagine the thing weighs 40 pounds.
Yeah. And it's got the pannier racks on the back. Well, I mean, it's like clunking. I think of this after the fact, but yeah. Just the origin of mountain biking being the clunker. Sure. And the thing was steady.
Yeah, steady.
It was a solid ride.
I love it. You're like, but he's speaking.
People liked it. they were asking me what's in the racks, and I was like, just snacks. It's lots of snacks. I stocked up at the Crepe Myrtle Market and got like some soybean curd chips and like basically Rice Krispie treats. Yeah,
the Asian food market, right? Treats.
Yeah, it was great. I had like less than $20 to get to stretch out over those 3 days. And so it was like Asian market, the rental bike, you know, just the little things that I needed. I ended up borrowing after the fact from Fallon, like her leftover energy stuff, her nutrition. And yeah.
This is amazing. Like, we on the sports nutrition side, the cutting edge of sports nutrition and endurance sports says you need to have need to. I mean, I throw that in air quotes. Basically, you can be consuming north of 100 grams of carbs per hour, which when you do the math, you can be doing well over $20 in the race alone. And so you're saying you're doing $20 over the course of 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, lentils and rice, bumming like food from my Airbnb mates, which is like, because I flew in, I didn't go to the store.
Right.
I just had some leftovers from my climbing trip, and then I had like some cheap essentials, and then bummed some food. Eventually, though, race time, you know, I had some couple things of coconut water. I lost one because it exploded in the bag. Mm-hmm. That was devastating because I actually needed that hydration. I didn't have that many bottles.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes after that happened and I'm out of water,
mm-hmm.
and I'm running low on food, I start finding stuff on the trail, like people's bottles that have lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh my God, there's a bottle. Pull over, grab it. It's full of hydration, like pre-mixed everything.
Perfect.
Scavenger.
Yeah.
And then like fruit waffles on the ground, grab them. Goose on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Cliff bar, you know, gummies.
What'd you do? And then you roll up on an aid station and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is like going to the food pantry. Like, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I actually didn't, other than the quesadillas at the second aid station, I didn't take anything other than water. I was on the hunt for some potato chips, but I was never that fast. I mean, I started my race at the far back of the pack because I was concerned that going downhill that I would go too fast and that I would have to navigate around people with coaster brakes.
Yeah.
And I'm not experienced with that. But
not to mention your bike is like realistically 4 feet wide.
It's pretty wide, yeah. And so I didn't want to put anybody else at risk for doing something dumb. So
wise.
It turned out that it wasn't actually that fast because of all the friction from the panniers, air friction, and then the big tires.
Sure.
Like, you would go fast, but it wasn't out of control. Mm-hmm. So I ended up becoming really comfortable just getting in a good position with the downhills. But I started out, it was really handy. I got behind a tall bike. He was kind of like a petite tall bike. Okay. Like, wasn't quite like your full blown tall bike, but they were all single speed, the tall bike, and like two or three of his friends. And that really helped me because I haven't done a ton of single speed stuff and I didn't know exactly when I should be standing.
Yeah,
like, because at a certain point you're either standing or you're not. And at a certain point you have to. And so I just learned how to, like, when to stand when they would go.
Yep.
And I was like, if I can just keep up with them,
yeah,
be okay.
Well, how do you suppose your gearing was? Like, this is a townie bike that is designed for people who don't ride bikes around a very flat area. So did you find you were undergeared or overgeared? Were you spinning or are you mashing?
Well, obviously when I start to go downhill, I was spinning, but
yeah.
I was mashing the gear. It's a pretty big gear for going uphill. I don't know what it would be.
Yep.
I never walked. And that was a little bit because I had some doubters that were like, in my friend group that were like a little bit like, I don't know, or like, you might have to walk it. It's mm-hmm. kind of steep. And so a little bit, I was like, oh, I'm definitely not walking now. Like,
yeah,
but I just pumped with a lot of momentum. People were generally pretty nice if I had to pass them because mm-hmm. I just couldn't slow down. And I was pretty much standing the whole time, just cranking the handlebars. It felt like they were going to break sometimes.
Yeah.
And also like pumping the runnel, like kind of like working the front wheel back and forth
yep.
to try and like get that little bit of flat ground travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
did you, does the 50 mile course go on the river crossing at like mile 12? Not river, but a big water crossing?
It didn't.
Okay.
The only obstacle that I really faced that I did walk with everyone was a mud pit, which was kind of funny. It was very dry, and then all of a sudden there's this mud pit, and it was like, did they just make this? That was pretty fun because you got to watch people's reaction. If they were like trying to go fast around everybody, they would maybe try and like get in the mud and walk around, but it was just like this horrible like mess, and some people looked like they were, you know, maybe they didn't know how deep the mud was, and they just go, you know, walk. But there was like a very easy crossing if you just waited, but there's some people that were like trying to get the advantage that would
dump out
in the mud. It was awesome. Everybody had their reasons for getting muddy.
That is amazing. I'm picturing the water crossing only because, and maybe you should have sent it across the mud pit because your bike is
also, I would have if I could have.
Yeah, your bike is equipped with like huge fenders. So you would have been completely clean. You're on like, based on the picture, you're on 3-inch wide tires. You would have just like floated over the top of it. I think you got a dream boat for that kind of thing.
I was sad that I didn't get to do the water crossing, and I almost considered just switching courses to do the water crossing, but it's all good.
You're like, I'm going full send. Well, that's a great question. How did you end up deciding which route to do?
Oh, I knew the 100 would be kind of grim. I mean, I was coming from a climbing trip, and in Red Rocks, there's just like, it's just a lot of hiking fitness. And so you're hiking for 4 or 5 hours a day and doing the climbing. Yeah. And so legs wise, it's like, I think I could maybe, but I know that those last 30 miles probably of the 100 would be like really hard and kind of dark and maybe like a little like, I don't know. I think in my mind I wanted to, but in reality I was like, you're already fatigued.
Yeah.
Just do the 58, have a great time.
Yeah.
And it was type one, like the whole time. I don't think it was ever like so hard that I, you know, doubted a decision or anything.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I think the 100 on the orange ride, I mean, it hasn't been done to my knowledge. Maybe it didn't happen. I wasn't there, but I think that needs to be done for sure.
Goals. 2025 goals.
Yeah.
Did you end up, you had this little posse of the mini tall bike, some other single speeders. Was there the natural ebb and flow out there, like a moving peloton, or did you recognize anybody else? Did you have any other friends out there, or were you just, I mean, I imagine people are seeing you and like stoked to be riding with you.
Yeah, a lot of people liked the bike. They would say it's like their favorite bike, or they were just stoked or surprised. I think like the amount of benevolence generated by the shock of the bike,
yes,
was really fun to experience. I think that's like that's the most I could have gotten out of that event, is doing exactly that. I didn't see, I mean, yeah, I kind of like ebbed and flowed. I kind of stayed in the same heat, I feel like, through most of it, because in the end ended up finishing like within 10 minutes of tall bike and single speeds.
Yep.
And, but,
do you have any idea what your finishing time was?
I think it was like 7.5 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Or so.
Amazing. Amazing.
It was a blast.
What is your experience of the finish line? Like, this event is iconic because Bobby will chase you down and give a hug to every single finisher, much to his chagrin during COVID. like, were you aware of that element of this event and Bobby's presence?
I didn't know. I did learn that, like, watching the run. The run, you know, where he greeted everybody at the stands, because I was waiting for Rose and Fallon to finish, and so I got to see him, how he like bounced around to everybody.
Yeah.
The run was probably a little easier too, because people are coming in a little slower.
Sure.
A little bit more spread out, but yeah, he greeted everyone at the finish line like with so much energy. I know how much that takes.
Oh my gosh.
Out of you.
Right.
You gotta, yeah, it's amazing. And especially, yeah, with the cycling event, they're coming in like, mm-hmm. you know, like in every minute there's several people coming in at certain points, or even worse. And so like, he's literally sprinting back and forth. He was setting me up to take a photo, and then he'd like run and trying to get somebody else, and then run and trying to get somebody else, and then come back to me like, wait here.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
go yeah. like dart around. And at a certain point I was like, okay, I'm gonna sneak away. And he's like, no, grab the bike, like lifted it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's super heavy. You know, and congratulated me. We took a photo. And he was hyped. He was hyped that it got done on that bike. Which I think it makes total sense. I mean, it's the campus bike. It's a Stillwater bike.
Uh-huh.
And it's maybe a program that needs some love, you know, financially with such a big baller campus, you know, throw some money at your bike program, like, or, you know, co-mingle with the biking community in that regard. Like, I think there's a huge place for that cheap rental situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm literally looking at the photo right now. You're spot on, right? I mean, this is a school of, I forget what, 50,000 students or more in a town of a handful of tens of thousands of people. You got a shop like district, which is just a magnet for people, right? I mean, much like the event, it draws in people of all kinds who would otherwise never ride a bike. And then the bike itself is like, it's that, you look at it, it's the perfect mode of transportation. The thing is totally utilitarian. It's designed for riding around campus. I can't imagine how long it would take to accumulate 58 miles under normal circumstances. I mean, shoot, I bet that bike hasn't seen 58 miles in its life.
Probably not. and they're like, they're good bikes. I think like Steven, the guy who helped me in transportation, I think he said they got them for like mid $300. Like, it's a solid bike. Just needs little, it's really easy for, you know, to have somebody maintenance those.
Yeah. And in looking at the finishing photo, you got your panniers chock full of stuff. You got your helmet there. It looks like a nice hodgepodge collection of water bottles.
Yeah, that was all my booty.
How ragtag is your attire? Like, when you fly in, do you have a backpack full of climbing gear? Or do you have, I mean, you presumably don't have like
pretty multiple much.
Outfits. Like,
I've just got a bag of clothes. I got a climbing backpack with a little thing of clothes, a chunk, big hunks of metal, climbing gear, and then a bag of rice and a bag of lentils and like a few other things. Those pants that I'm wearing in the photo are ripped in the butt. Like,
as a result of the ride?
No, they were ripped before the ride, but because I wanted to wear those in particular on the ride. You know, I was like, whatever. But it was a bit, it was pretty thrown together. Everything's pretty thrown together.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess you're not wearing a chamois.
No, but you know what? I was a little worried about that, but honestly, I wore my best underwear and those like kind of like slim pants and that beach seat, the beach cruiser seat, I didn't chafe at all. I had no hot spots or nothing. I definitely would have on the hunt if I would have done more, but like I wasn't so impressed at how comfortable that was.
The thing looks plush. I mean, more often than not, I steer people away from that. Because it is the full pillow type seat, but I don't know. That one looks, it's almost like a Brooks meets a pillow. Instead of just like your big cushy gel one, that thing looks comfortable.
You talk about, like people talk about having like numb or like problems from riding on the gravel for so long. I mean, obviously the seat's super heavy. It would slow you down, but it was pretty comfortable. I could see it for like a bike packing setup or like... Or just cruising.
Amazing. What's your immediate? Yeah. Not immediate. Afterwards, there's Bobby trying to take a photo. Do you catch up with your friends? Do you want to take a nap? Do you grab a beer? What do you do? What do you do afterwards? How do you get home?
Oh, I'm with my friends, so they're waiting for me at the finish line, and they're psyched. Fallon got a media pass, so she's in the shoot.
Oh, perfect.
And, greeted by that. And, James had just raced the 100 mile. So he was ready to just go home and rest.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going fast. So, I don't blame him. I was pretty good too. I was like, we just went home, made dinner and, I had to return the bike. That was the other thing.
Right.
They were out. They were closed that day, so I just dropped off the bike. But that was pretty much it because it was a pretty quick turnaround when I had to be home. So I ended up riding back with some other people the next day. But it was really cool. I think people really liked it as kind of a little bit of a reprieve from. Just kind of the hardcore bike culture stuff. Sure. And I think that's why that got so much love, that post. Fallon took that photo and hit me up when Mid-South added her as a collaborator or whatever. And she was like, you should make a Mid-South post. I was like, okay. And it was pretty crazy. I've never, like, for me, like, you know, 1,200 likes on Instagram is viral. Like, I was blown away.
1,300 now.
How much people liked it. And like the mayor commented on there. I don't know. It's just so many people. It was really fun. To have that on the back end. I had no idea. I knew people would like it like during for sure, but no,
Yeah. It's amazing.
That's also speaks to like the machine that is like Mid-South media team and everything. I feel like they do a really good job at following up on all their stuff. And
also very true. Given that you are not a cyclist per se, and please tell me if that is incorrect. Are you familiar with the term spirit of gravel? Have you ever heard that term bandied about?
Recently, I guess probably through this event. And I think it's the spirit of like making do with what you have, not wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
Also like low judgment barriers, like for other riders, like. But I think at the real core, it's kind of just like kind of that, just the ingenuity side of things. I think the origins of it are really punk or metal, I think some would say. And so it's like, I think it's fitting to have that become getting popular as You know, cycling continues to grow too. It's just like a good outlet for people that don't want to be so serious, and kind of want to have a different experience on a course, whether they're racing or not. You know, you're still going to have opportunities, to have different experiences. I think it's, you know, it could change, like, as these big corporations buy up the races and stuff. I guess like Unbound isn't a small event anymore, mm-hmm. ran by like the original people. Mid-South is really unique in that sense. And so, I mean, there are other courses, in the country that are independently run, but I think that's a huge part of the gravel spirit. And that's why a huge part of why I had the experience I did, is because Bobby and Crystal and everyone else on their team in Stillwater is like, they're still loving it. They're still doing it. I mean, there might come a day, sure. but I hope they do it for a long time.
I couldn't agree more in everything you just said. Yeah, it is the run what you brung vibe. It is show up and ride whatever you've got, which you did perfectly. And then not only that, but then got to rely on the benevolence of others. And especially what you said at the end. I mean, yeah, Bobby and Crystal they're amazing, and they are so welcoming, and they've created this event that is so welcoming. And there are certainly positives of all the big events out there, but I think the spirit of gravel exists at especially these independent events that have their quirkiness and their charm and their ability to do things that a corporation would disallow. So yeah, yeah. I mean, the term spirit of gravel is sort of, it's joked about, it's been hackneyed, it's used so often because the sport of gravel has become so serious and corporatized that it's joked that, okay, the spirit is lost, but it's so cool to see that that is incorrect.
Well, thank you.
What else comes to mind? Do you have other events on your calendar, or is it back to climbing and some carpentry, and maybe we'll be see you back at Stillwater 2025?
I think I'll definitely be back at Stillwater 2025 because of how good my experience was this year. Mm-hmm. I don't have any events this year on the books. I would love to maybe do some bikepacking this year, and maybe combine bikepacking and climbing a little bit. My car has been sitting for the past week. I still, you know, just try and always ride my bike. But yeah, other than that, just rock climbing in Red River Gorge until this fall. I'm going to Yosemite. No bike events. I look forward to next year at Mid-South, and maybe this year I've learned more and more about more of those independent gravel rides, and I would like to kind of play around with more of those in the next few years.
Nice. Well, you have my phone number. We're in touch. I have spare most things. So if you a week in advance say, oh shoot, Ted, I actually need a helmet or bottles or a bike or whatever, I would like you to reach out, and I'd love to meet you in person, because this has been a very cool introduction courtesy of the bicycle.
Sure, Ted. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Yeah, that's very kind.
Well, I'll let you have the rest of your evening. Anything else?
Maybe just want to throw out a challenge idea to anybody that's interested. I might do it. Someone might do it one day. But they're... If you did rent an Oklahoma City bike, you can legally, you can take them out of the city for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. If you go beyond that, you're like facing a large fine. I think it's like $1,200 or something like that.
Good grief.
So the real race is to get a bike, take it to Stillwater, race the 100 and get the bike back before the 24 hours is up, or you pay like a crazy fine.
So do it on the $2. That's a good way to set the budget. Be like, I'm going to do it for one day and get it back in time.
Yeah, I don't know how much those are, but
what time do you have any idea what time the office closes? Like, what time do you have to get it back to pull off the 24-hour challenge?
Oh, sorry, this maybe have been confusing, but this would be the like Oklahoma City, like you literally take it from the city. this one, mine, I got from Stillwater.
I see.
There was no hard rules on my.
Okay, yeah, I'm amazed that they don't have a GPS nearby. You're saying fly into OKC,
yes,
and try to pull that off. Okay, that is the most amazing challenge to date. I completely endorse that.
Because it's like a double-edged, I mean, it's like a sword with the handle is also a sword. It's sure. Like not, it's just for the, that's just like well lose, said. Lose.
Did you see the fleet of OKC bikes? Like, do you know if that is a faster bike or better maintained, or is it anyone's guess right now?
It is anyone's guess. I would imagine, like most city bikes, that they have three speeds.
Yeah.
So that might be okay. That might be a good thing. It might be a failure point,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah,
for, like,
yeah.
The single speed really helped.
Hey, you could challenge the limitations of that three-speed drivetrain. See if you can just tear it apart on one of the hills.
I was thinking that it would be the funniest thing ever if you had... If you could get in the pack in the very beginning and just hang on, just totally cook out.
Yeah.
Just hang on maybe like 20 minutes, maybe, like just roasting yourself. And then you get like, you know, like 5 seconds of footy of the Peloton going by with like,
right. Exactly. And you see this bike. This is 40 pound.
But then like, then you just cook out and you're just toast after like a mile.
I like it. I think, okay. Dear listener, the challenge has been presented. So
it's presented.
No one wants to see it happen. I want to see it happen. I want to see a whole peloton of these things next year. I think we're up.
I think it should be someone commented it should be a division.
Completely. Exactly.
The orange bike division.
I love it. All right.
Well, thank you so much, Ted.
My pleasure. Noah, it has been very fun talking with you. I appreciate you making the time pretty darn easily, and I wish you a wonderful summer and great climbing, and hopefully I see you in about 11 months.
Yes, thank you, Ted. Have a good night.